large holdings of land that were subdivided to tenant farmers. And the tenant farmer, once he was foolish enough, or he had no choice in most of the cases, but if he was foolish enough to start to work, so for the rest of his life he was a slave. He could never pay off. It's like the mafia, like borrowing money from the mafia, right? You can never pay off. The interest rates are set at such an excessive, exorbitant amount that even if you pay it off, it's never paid off. Well, here also, it was the owner of the piece of land was entitled to such an exorbitant amount of the crop, and the poor farmer had to buy his seed, and he had to rent his animals, and he had to rent the tools and everything, and he had to rent the hovel that he lived in, that by the time it was all over, he had to work next year to pay off this year's debts. And the longer he stayed, the more in debt he was. And you're talking at a time when there was no bankruptcy law, you know, you couldn't wipe him out, you couldn't pick up and move. And if you didn't pay, so then they, if you were lucky, they threw you in jail. And if you were not lucky, then they killed you. They took your children away from you. But it's an unspeakable type of society. It's is unimaginable to us. And almost 70% of the population of Poland was engaged in being serfs on the land. And the one who enforced the laws of the landlord, forced the laws of the noblemen and of the royalty, almost invariably was the Jew. The word for it in Polish was that every nobleman had his moszkę. Moszkę was the Polish way of saying Moshe. Everyone had his moszkę, and the Jews ran it. And again, if the Jew was also caught in the middle, because if he was decent and kind to the serf, so he could never come up with the rents and with the taxes and everything else that he was supposed to, and he would therefore feel the wrath of the landowner. And if he did run it efficiently, quote unquote, as the landlord wanted it, so then the serf, if you'll see the Shilas and Chuvitz, the rabbinic response throughout the 15th, 16th, 17th, the 18th centuries of Eastern Europe, the same story repeats itself over and over again, that the Jewish collector went out in the morning to collect, and they found him in the forest at night without his head, or they found him drowned in the river. And then the question is enough of him left to be identifiable so that we could at least guarantee that his wife is a widow and that she shouldn't remain in Aguna? But that story is repeated there hundreds and hundreds of times. And for every story that is written in the responsa, there probably were 100 more that occurred that were not written.
So it was a no-win situation, to put it mildly. The third area that Jews worked at, which again was a reprehensible type of job, was that of lending money at usurious rates of interest. Again, the money was not theirs, they were the middlemen.
By the time the Renaissance reached Europe, most of the Christian bankers had lost any inhibitions regarding taking interest from fellow Christians. And in fact, the church itself borrowed money at interest and lent money at interest. Somehow they came to an accommodation with the original injunction, which they felt was binding upon them, not to lend money at interest.